Miss Jane Elliott is an 80-something-year-old social activist who has been in the middle of the fight for racial equality and a more equitable American society since she was first thrust onto the national stage by her revolutionary exercise called Blue Eyes, Brown Eyes. The day Martin Luther King was assassinated, she was compelled to do something by making a difference between blue-eyed and brown-eyed children in her class. She saw the blue-eyed children become timid and angry, and the brown-eyed children become domineering, superior, and nasty. This experience formed the basis for her career as a public speaker against discrimination. And the documentary, The Eye of the Storm, recorded her bold but important work on race and racism. Thank you, Ms. Elliott, for joining us here on Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Well, thank you for inviting me. This is a huge compliment.
I was so excited to read your bio and to see the work that you did in the past and the work that you're continuing to do. 80-something young. I didn't want to add any years or take any years away. But
that's all right. You don't have to. I'm 84. I was born the year that both Adolf Hitler and Franklin Roosevelt came to power.
Wow.
Yeah, now think about that, and think about the things that I've seen and experienced happening in this world, in this country, and overseas as a result of those two men and what they did and what they didn't do. It's absolutely amazing.
And the work that you did in the school, I mean, the day I was very, very young when Martin Luther King was assassinated, but of course, you know, I have memories of it because it was so detrimental to the Black community and the community at large who wanted peace and race relations. And so that day you were inspired to do something special and you're continuing your work. Tell us about that day when you first decided to do that blue-eyed, brown-eyed experiment, they call it.
Well, they call it an experiment because they're trying to make it less important or make it illegal. It's not an experiment. What I did that day was, I hate to think about it because I get sick to my stomach. I came home from school on April 4th, and my third graders were studying the Indian unit. We were going to put the teepee up the next day that my previous year's students had made. I had it under my arm to wash and dry it and iron it that. And I walked in the door, the telephone was ringing. Answered the telephone. My sister said, "Is your television on?" I said, "No, why?" She said, "You better turn it on." I said, "Why?" She said, "Because they shot him." And I, chuckling, said, "Who'd we shoot this time?" Because we had done it so often at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Martin Luther King Jr." My life changed drastically in that moment. He had represented hope. He had been one of our heroes of the month in February, along with George Washington, who owned slaves, bought and sold people for money. Abraham Lincoln, who was our first, in fact, black president. Davy Crockett, who was famous because he got killed, as, you know, working to kill people who were different from ourselves, those Mexicans, you know. And I couldn't quite fathom how I could explain that killing to my kids the next day. So I washed and ironed that teepee. I was washed and dried the teepee. I was ironing out on the living room floor, watching television, and Walter Cronkite said to three leaders of the black community, "When our leader was killed, his widow held us together. Who's going to keep your people in line?" I was so appalled at the insensitivity and the ignorance of that question. I couldn't believe it. As far as I was concerned, you know, Walter Cronkite and God looked alike. I couldn't believe it. So I changed the channel, and there was Dan Rather saying to three leaders of the black community, "Don't you Negroes think you should feel sympathy for us white folks because we can't feel the anger at this killing that you Negroes can?" I thought, oh my God, how can he not feel anger at the man who represented hope for all of us in this country? I was absolutely appalled. I decided at that moment, I rolled up the teepee, threw it in the closet, and decided that the next day, instead of just learning the Sioux Indian prayer, which says, "Oh, great spirit, keep me from ever judging a man until I've walked a mile in his moccasins," that I would arrange to have it answered for them. I decided that the next day I would do what Hitler did and what our president is doing now. I would divide people on the basis of something over which they have no control. And in that case, it was the color of their eyes. Now we are judging people on the basis of the color of their skin. And we're going to keep those who are too brown skinned and reproduce too rapidly out of this country. It makes no sense. We are taking drastic steps backward. I didn't think of it that day. I thought we have to solve this problem that I know I will find in my third graders because they were raised in the same community in which I was. And so I decided at that moment that the next day I would split my group according to the color of their eyes. And I would treat those who had the right color eyes as we treat white people in this country. And I would treat those who had the wrong color eyes as we treat people of color. And since I was blue-eyed and blue-eyed, and most of the students in the room were blue-eyed, I didn't want all the majority group to be on top that first day, so brown-eyed kids were on top. If I had known before I went to bed and said that prayer, "Oh, great spirit, keep me from ever judging a man until I've walked a mile in his moccasins," I wouldn't have said that prayer if I had known what was going to happen the next morning. Because the first thing I found out is how I look to my students and to people of color.
Mm-hmm.
I was absolutely appalled at how quickly my brown-eyed students became what I told them they were. And they became bullies. They became aggressive. They became overbearing. They became just arrogant monsters. I couldn't believe it in 15 minutes. And I watched a couple of brilliant third-grade students become unable to compete academically on the day they had their own color eyes. If anybody, and people had told me, you know, I'd taken all those psychology courses, and I thought I knew about expectations. I knew nothing about expectations until I did that exercise with my third graders and realized that we create problems in this society by the way we treat one another, and we treat one another the way we do because of the ignorance of racism.
Where do you think we are right now? I mean,
we're back to where we were before we started the civil rights movement. That's where we are right now. Now that's too extreme. We aren't that far back. We're back to when it was all right to use the N-word, when it was all right to use the P-word when you talk about women. We are back to a time that my father would have been absolutely infuriated by.
We have
become crass and ugly. We've become an ugly, greedy, crass society. It's unbelievable. If anybody had told me that one person could take this country back 30 years within 2 years, I'd have said, "Well, you're crazy."
Do you think there's anyone in the media today, and you know, anyone in the spotlight that's actually moving in a forward direction?
I think a lot of media people are trying to move us off this awful place we have landed now. But we are being encouraged not to listen to anyone except that one person and his cohorts. And now we have industrialists, and we have people who have lots of billionaires who are now helping to fund the elections of people who will follow this insanity. And what's going on in this country today is insanity. If you base your self-image on the amount of a chemical in your skin, you have a problem. You need to get some help.
Is that what it boils down to? The Eye of the Storm documentary, that the chemical in your skin just shouldn't be the determining factor in your life?
That's what it boils down to. And if you look at any facet of our society, you will find racism negatively impacting that facet of our society.
Give me an example of what you're talking about.
Well, housing.
Just one. Yeah, housing, okay.
Housing. Let's just talk about housing. Or let's just talk about education. Or let's just talk about denying the legitimacy of a man for the presidency who is obviously qualified to be there, but because of the color of his skin, we have been told that he is an American citizen. Let's talk about that. We won't talk about that because what we are experiencing right now, in my estimation, is white people's response to 8 years of a black man in the White House. I remember when Richard Nixon said to a group of reporters, "I'm trying to save you the White House for you white people."
The classic Southern strategy.
Well, yeah. And now we have all those Tea Party people in there, and now we have a man who has said openly that it is his purpose to keep America white. If you haven't read Ben Wattenberg's book, The Birth Dearth, you should get it and read it. He was an advisor to presidents of the United States. He was a member of the American Enterprise Institute, an ultra-conservative Republican. You should read his book, in which he says, in the first paragraph, the major problem confronting the United States today is there aren't enough white babies being born in this country. If we don't fix this and fix it soon, white people will be in the numerical minority, and this will no longer be a white man's land. Now, that strikes me as blatant, overt racism. So I read the book. It's terrifying. He says we can solve this in three ways. One, we can pay women to have babies as they have been doing in Western European nations for years. Then he says, unfortunately, and these are his words, not mine, we would have to pay women of all colors to have babies, so we don't want to do that. He says the second thing we could do is allow more legal immigrants into this country every year. Then he says, unfortunately, the majority of those wanting to come to this country today are people of color, so we don't want to do that. He says the third thing we could do is remember that 60% of the fetuses that are aborted every year are white. If we could keep that 60% alive, that would solve our birth dearth.
Let me just ask you a question. I mean, you are really saying some things I don't know if most people have even heard.
Because they haven't been listening.
But my question to you is, considering where we are, if I was to agree with your position and your view of what you've heard and what has been said, what is the solution to the problem? I mean, what can those people who really see that we are stronger together, that diversity is a good thing, what do we have to do?
Well, first we have to stop talking about white male fragility, which is the new term that has come up to protect them. And no, first we have to teach from pre-birth to after death that there's only one race on the face of the earth. We are all descendants of those first black females who evolved in sub-Saharan Africa from 250,000 to 500,000 years ago.
You're talking about Lucy, Tanzania Lucy.
I don't know whether it was Lucy or Merton or Mabel. I don't know who it was. I have no idea. But I know that the first modern human beings that evolved on this earth were black women. And because they were adventurous and smart and creative, they were able to multiply and to travel. They reached every landmass, practically speaking, on the face of the earth. And as they moved farther and farther from the equator, their bodies produced less and less melanin, so that their skin got lighter and lighter. That is the reason for skin color. It has nothing to do with being God's chosen children. Now, white people have very fair, pale skin. Not fair skin, because white people, generally speaking, aren't in this country, haven't been fair. And we don't intend to be fair, but they have light-colored skin because their bodies produce less melanin, because they were exposed to less and less sunlight. That's what it's about. We're arguing and fighting over something that somebody came up with about 500 years ago. Before that...
Jane, let me just make sure I hear you clearly. Okay. So if the answer is that there's only one race, and it's the human race, then the answer is for us to be together as one people.
And to not have
the great divisions that are between the races, between the sexes, just for us to be collectively together, one people working together for a collective good. So tell me, Jane,
yes,
what you're doing now. What work are you doing right now?
I'm giving speeches just like this one to anybody who will listen or who wants to pay me to do it.
Where can someone catch you if they want to see one of your speeches?
Oh, lots of places, and I don't put that out on the radio because I've been threatened with death so often that I go into the college or university, and they have security for me, and I get out as fast as I can.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. It sounds like you really... keep things exciting, even in your old age.
Yeah, this is my old age. if people would just stop and realize that if you do your DNA, every person will have at least 1% of their DNA from an African country.
So, Jane,
and that's really going to be difficult for white folks to deal with, but we'd better be dealing with it, because in the future, every time I do a speech, when I'm done, and I tell
Jane, I just want to give our listeners an opportunity. Can you give us your website and how people can contact you if they want to have you come to the college university? What's a contact website for you that people can reach out and connect with you?
Elliot, E-L-L-I-O-T-T dot B-L-I-B-R-I at gmail.com. But let me warn you about something. If you who are listening to this decide to send me a hateful letter, I'm going to write another book. And on the left-hand side of the page, I'm going to put a piece of hate mail. And on the right-hand side of the page, I'm going to put a piece of mail that came from someone whose life was changed by seeing the film The Eye of the Storm or A Class Divided.
Well, Jane, listen, we thank you so much for sharing some time with us and just giving us an overview of your life experience. We thank you for coming on to WOOC 105.3 FM. We wish you well in your continued work. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, bye now.
All right, bye-bye. That was Jane Elliott, American reformer, college professor, and fighter against racism. We thank her for joining us on the show.